Okay, y'all, I'm going to go ahead and get started. This is our second SHAC meeting, the School Health Advisory Council. We have two presenters today. Our first one is Amy. She's from the University of Houston. And we'll be going over the impact of the Healthy Hunger. The Free Kids Act of 2010. We thought it might be beneficial right now because this coming year we move into the next sodium target. There were targets that each district had to meet for sodium when the 2010 Kids Act was enacted. So we'll just go over basically what that entailed and the changes the school districts had to make, and y'all can ask questions at the end. Okay, Amy, go ahead.
Hi, everyone. Thank you for joining me today. I'm Amy Kawaguchi. I'm a director of the Kingdom with the University of Houston. And then today, I'm going to talk about the impact of the Healthy and the Free Kids Act of 2010 on child food testing. So why do I talk about obesity? Because it's so prevalent, not only among adults, but also among children. And studies have shown as the child age from 2 to 19, the prevalence increases from 14% to 21%. And then obesity can be caused by different factors. It's not only one thing, it can be your activity level, if you exercise, what you eat, how you eat, your sleeping habits, genetics, it can be medicine, and then also environment. And then there's also a factor called delayed gratification, which is a desire to obtain something quick but small reward over something big but delayed. And then especially these days, everything's at your fingertips. One click, you can get something on Amazon or whatever. So it's getting harder for everyone to wait. And then there's one study, interesting study I found, which was when a child fails to wait 7 minutes. Years of age to get the delayed reward, 7 minutes they can wait, and then it increases their likelihood to be obese at the age of 11 by 1.3 times than the 1,000 rate. And then these are little maps showing the obesity rates among different states, the U.S. over time. This is 1990. So what this shows is as the color changes from blue to red, the obesity rate increases. So this is 1990. Basically, all the states are blue, which was not so much obesity was observed, but over time it became yellowish, reddish color, and then the next slide shows 2021, which is almost an updated one. And if you want to limit the success, which is right here, this one indicates 35 to 40% of the population is considered obese. So this is getting serious, and that's why we chose this topic. We try to identify the impact of Healthy Hunger Act. Well, And this is a little figure showing what your dietary choice is influenced by. It can be your perception of food, how you perceive the beliefs, perception of food, what's available close to you, if you have access to it in regards of current finance and transportation as well. And also importantly, if your school, restaurant, grocery stores can provide it, it can depend on that context. So here comes the Healthy Hunger-Free Kids Act of 2010. This legislation was signed back in 2010. It basically covers national school lunch, breakfast, and snack stand programs with the goal of increasing more fruit, vegetables, whole grains, and green protein, while reducing fat, added sugar, and refined grain products. Also sodium, which is salt. We try to meet the minimum nutrition within the requirement. And task four, serving size were adjusted based on children's age. And also, students were required to serve either vegetable or fruit, otherwise, it would be the trailer.
So, one of the things that changed, as Amy mentioned, was increasing of fresh fruits and vegetables. So, before 2010, we could receive federal reimbursement for every student that had a tray with an entree and a milk. They just had to have three items on their tray. Most of our entrees are two items. When this legislation passed, in 2010, every student not only needed three components, but one of them had to be a fruit or a vegetable. So in the beginning, it was a little rough. I remember that year I had kids passing the register and immediately throwing their fruit in the garbage. But as the years have progressed, it seems as though the students, since this is something that they're doing now from pre-K through 12th grade, this is something that they are used to. We also kind of changed their palates a little bit. We went from being able to serve white bread, regular pasta, to having to serve all of our whole grains, and everything needed to be 51% whole grain. We also, that year, most districts didn't have fryers, but at this point, no schools really could have fryers if they were participating in the program because of the fat content that came along with that. So just keep in mind, all of our chicken tenders and anything breaded is all 51% whole grain. So manufacturers had to adjust to these to this legislation as well. So it was a big change. But I think school districts, you know, we're 10 years or so into it, we're adapting well.
And this is the little comparison before the legislation took place and after, how the menu changed. And then I know this, the letters are so tiny, so we're going to do it on Monday. Instead of letters, I'm going to show you some pictures. So this is the menu they got before the legislation took place. They got bean burrito, 2% milk, apple sauce, and oranges. But you can see there's no vegetables. And then this one showing the menu after the legislation. So now they get skim milk instead of 2% milk, and then sandwich, the bread became whole wheat. They have some options of vegetables, fruit, beans, and all the condiments they can eat a bowl pack.
So just to expand on the vegetables, before the Healthy Hunger-Free Kids Act, we didn't have to have that many limitations on what we could serve the kids. Nowadays, we have have so many subcategories we have to serve within the week. So within the week, we have to offer a dark green vegetable somewhere within the week of the menu for each campus. I have to serve 3 servings of red orange, and the other vegetables that constitutes green beans, shredded lettuce, all of those, we have to serve at least a half a cup at our elementaries and 3/4 cup at our high school. And all of those subcategories have to be met in order for when we're audited for those menus to be acceptable. The other one is legume. We have to serve a legume every week. So you'll see those different colored vegetables each week, and that's just a requirement that we have.
So we talk about what the legislation was, but what was the impact of the legislation on child abuse? So it's been studied that the legislation was most beneficial among children low-income families because they were likely to eat at school because they can either get a reduced price meal or totally free meals at school. And this child from the low-income family was the population that was, which the obesity was most prevalent among others. So the legislation really helped to slow down the BMI rate. This is a little map showing the probability of obesity among children. This orange line showing the children from low-income family. Low-income family, I mean by below 185% of the poverty line. So it was going up and up, and this line indicates the time legislation took place and implemented, and we can see the obesity rate significantly grown. So this was the population that was most influenced by the legislation. So overall, the legislation really helped to improve the dietary intake by including more fruits, vegetables, whole grains, and beans. Also, using sodium, salt, and restriction of portion sizes helped children prevent overeating. And studies have concluded there was no reduction in the number of students participating in the school lunch program, and there was no significant increase in food waste, but this is only because researchers are looking at the outcome over time, over several years, and it doesn't mean there was no food waste at the end. At the beginning of the legislation.
So we're hoping that one of the goals of the Healthy Hunger for Kids Act is not only to improve our kiddos' meals on campus, but to help them learn healthier habits while at school and take that home. You know, we know that most kids are eating meals at home as well. So that trend of obesity coming down seems to have something to do with what's happening at school, and hopefully those tastes are, you know, coming home with them.
And however, there was no significant association between the how many times students participate in the program and the health status of the students. And the direct impact on the health outcome is unknown. So takeaway from this little PowerPoint presentation is the quality of the school lunch program is alone by itself is not enough to influence the body weight status of children. It can be, like I said before, it can be multifactorial. It's not only about what they eat at school, but it can be what they eat at home, outside, like restaurant. There are other factors like medication, other disease, sleeping habits, activity level. So the legislation helped to increase the nutrition provided at school, but it can be, it is only one factor that helped improve the obesity rate. This is my presentation. Is there any questions for me? Thank you very much.
It's okay, I'm not going to play any of it. I decided against it. Just make sure parents know when.
Well, I think I spoke with some of you, but just warning, this presentation is about drugs and alcohol use. So if you have young children here, just be advised that's the content.
Can you buy your clicker? Oh, can I bring it back to you tomorrow?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, yeah.
And while they're getting me set up, my name is Amber Carter.
Stand in front of the presentation.
My name is Amber Carter. I work for the Bay Area Council on Drugs and Alcohol. I am the coalition coordinator for the Southeast Harris Community Coalition. Mm-hmm. And basically what a coalition does is it brings all sectors of the community together.
And this is like for
law enforcement, health professionals, and just concerned citizens and parents to talk about substance abuse issues that are going on in the community
and to come together to use some evidence-based strategies to reduce that in the community. Catherine and Mr. Novosad are really involved coalition members. They always come to our coalition meetings and are really involved. Sherry, her grant is just for the city of LaPorte, so she's been working in the city doing a lot of drug-free activities and things like that. We have a pretty long-standing relationship with LaPorte School District. That's kind of our... Is this the
pointer? Mm-hmm. Yep. So the big button will point.
Okay.
Okay. It's just my arrow. This one is for the same.
Okay. Got it. Okay, so this is a long presentation, but I'm gonna go through it pretty quickly. Let's have open discussion. Think about your campuses, the campuses that you're at, or if you're, you know, district wide, kind of think about some of these issues that might be going on in the district as we go along. I'm going to start off with marijuana edibles. Those are the latest kind of things. Even though we're not a legalized state, you'd be surprised that students do have access to these. So as you can tell, a lot of these are marijuana edible pictures. You can see how they are very similar to the regular products. They look appealing, they're packaged to appeal to young people, they're in candy flavors, cereal flavors. A lot of them contain this marijuana symbol, so when if you're confiscating any of these or you've seen them, I don't know if they've come up in the district or any classroom or anything like that, okay. I see some heads nodding. They are easily accessible. Some people tell me that they're in grocery stores. You can buy them at like CS. The ones that I bought for the presentation. Okay. In the basement area, so you can see the Disney nose, which at first glance just looks just like Doritos. And it has the California with the little marijuana symbol on there. And this is $15, so it's not like it's super expensive where students can't purchase it. It's not very expensive. And then it has education on here. Start with one serving. Wait and see what happens after you take it. Don't mix it. Keep it out of the reach of children. So we try to make you think that, you know, this is a safe product. When I bought this at the smoke shop, the guy, I went in specifically looking for chips. And he had them in the back. He didn't have them out, and he told me the reason why is because he believes the production of these are shady. That's what he told me. Probably everything in there was shady. So basically what they do is they will take the real product, whether it's real candy or real chips or whatever. So they'll take real Doritos, lay them out, and then they take a tincture, either a spray or an oil, that has THC
showed me what a teacher oil looks like. It's basically just drop it on there, and then so there's really no quality control. We don't know. They don't know. Because I asked them, like, well, how do you know that this is 600 milligrams of Delta 8? And he was like, well, you really don't. I mean, you just don't. Because when they're spraying it out, how many sprays is 600 milligrams? I mean, yeah. So, you can pass this around.
I'm just going to pass it. That's the chip.
There's a bunch of different gummies, and these are
yes.
The gummies I bought. At Lake City, our brand is Lake City, which has notebooks everywhere. This was a nerd rope that was in it, and it was infused with Delta 8, which is basically just a derivative of THC. The Delta 9 is like your regular THC that you would get marijuana. The Delta 8 is like a different cannabinoid. So, but a lot of these Delta 8s that they have tested, because one of our coalition members is a toxicologist from Peace Department of Science Center, and he said that a lot of these different products are, then what they say they have in them, they don't really have in them. So they might find like the synthetic cannabinoid, which is like Kush and stuff like that, that was so popular a few years back. So, if you have students passing out and doing crazy things, it might be these edibles. So the Delta 8 is, it's still legal, and then the Delta 9, which is basically just regular THC, the way they get around that is by saying it only contains 0.3% of THC, because that is legal. But when I was talking to one of the other smoke shops, the guy said the way they get around that is that 0.3% of THC can be any potency. So it could be a really, really potent 0.3%. So yeah, that's fun. Let's see. Oh, I'm going the wrong way. So what else? So be on the lookout for that symbol in the legalized states. They've had major uptake in poison control calls from kids. Small children get a hold of these products because they look like the real thing, and they have had children die because of it. THC vaping, I'm sure you guys unfortunately see a lot of this, and a lot of times and Officer Novosog, you might back me up on this, a lot of times you can tell it's THC, the liquid is, because it's thicker. It's like this amber looking color, and it's thicker. But then what do y'all have to do? Do you have to, like, you just toss it or send it to a lab, or
all those play dance on the realization. So until recently, what I understand,
right?
First of all, the amount that they have to pay the social that backs up what we already planned on the land of all the other land that they need to be that are paid on
yep.
So that's one piece. Now, one recently this that we have now moved medical centers around for everything. So they are, they will test, they will. We have to test it. Yeah, so what we do normally is we file it under drug health pavilion.
Yep.
Just so it gets into our court systems, we have to do it. We have to do a lot of work we did. We did pretty good about it. They sweep it, it's all over.
Yep.
And the inheritance of this later program, they won't test it against the houses.
Right. Right. So you see where law enforcement, their hands are kind of tied, even the district. I did a presentation recently for the ROC program. So they're for the youth, and a lot of them were paraphernalia from the school district. I just talked to them about all the issues and how they're really lucky, because if you have any THC, it's illegal, it's a felony. You don't know data from the school district. I just talked to them about all the issues and how they're really lucky, because if you have any THC, it's illegal, it's a felony. And so all the kids were like, well, I didn't get charged with a felony. I was like, well, you're really, really lucky. That's because somebody didn't want you at 16 years old to have a felony on your record. You know, you're getting into the Saturday class instead of, going to jail or having a felony on your record. So, what else? Let's see. It's
even if they wanted to file a drug charge, put them up in the front of the it's a false useless to put them in the times.
Yeah, yes. And I was asking when I went to the court and did the presentation, fashion, you guys probably see this because you don't have a dress code, right? Right, no uniform. Sorry, that's what I meant. Yeah, and I'm sure they try to sneak all of these different clothing items in and everything else. But it's just showing the glamorization, like the normalization and the glamorization of the marijuana industry, which is like a $1 billion industry. It's about money. And just the glamorization of drug use. Okay, so what to look for in the classroom. So probably y'all already know that in the classroom but all of these items, they kind of are designed to be easily concealed. So I do have the face watch. I bought it for like $19, $20 online. It came from Vegas. I had it within like 7 days. So it's accessible to dental school. You just pop it off and it's accessible there. And so it looks a lot like the app. Watch. I don't know if it's a brand new thing that really bad now, but it's a handy gadget if you're a vapor, I'm sure. and it used to work. You had a touch screen. It's like it looks fancy, but now I've had it for a while. What else? So I have a so what are you seeing the hidden in plain sight, exaggerated, all that? Okay.
Good. That's just the guidance I've already submitted. And then the other thing is, I'm looking at the because she's our tobacco coalition person. So she really stays up on all of these things. But these things are not always changing. Like, my bedroom now is already outdated. Like, I have to update it. That's one of the reasons why I didn't want to read it. Because I need to update it. Like,
all of a sudden, the other thing is notable is they're getting larger and larger cells of punchline when they get the yeah, so when the flavor thing, that's when Joel went by the wayside. We don't even talk to people about Joel because they'll think he went mad because Joel isn't a thing anymore. But they're making them have more and more cups. So right now, the most amount of punch is 5,000 cups.
In this?
Well, it's called the Puff Bar Plus.
Oh.
And you have all that, plus a flow, and it might not be a plus, it might be a
plus. Oh, this is the plus.
Okay.
It's
plus. Okay, so it is larger than that. So 5,000 is the most, because some of the other brands, you know, have not for cups, which is to give you an idea. The first Puff Bar had 400 cups, which was the equivalent of two packs of cigarettes. So just to kind of take 400 to 5,000. Also, speaking of cigarettes, you know, part of the time it's burning and they're not actually smoking it, but with a vape device, they're getting every bit of nicotine. And if they're not taking a puff from the vape device, then they cannot. Right, so it's extremely high levels of nicotine, which makes it extremely addictive to the animals.
And they'll start having withdrawals. Yeah. I mean, they'll get moody, they'll get angry if they don't have it. And the kids in the RAP program or the ROC program or whatever it's called, they were telling me, oh yeah, it gives you a buzz. It gives you a high.
That's how nicotine can give them.
And then it starts to prime, nicotine addiction starts to prime the brain for addiction. So if you got a 14-year-old, 15-year-old, 16-year-old, you know, changing their brain chemistry by vaping just nicotine. I mean, I know some parents think, oh, it's just nicotine, you know, but no, this is like extremely high levels. So this is a this is what they look like in the packet. What does that look like? I mean, you might come across this and not know, but this is a puff bar. It's still in the wrapper in the package, and it's pina colada. So you know that's always good.
They have a cutie policy. I think that depending on the size, about $12 to $15, so very affordable.
So you know they're just kind of designed to be easily hidden. You know the products are changing all the time. The students probably know what's the most popular right now and all of that. Skittles parties, I don't know if that's really a thing that is still going on. Apparently it was in one of the new show that's on?
Euphoria.
Euphoria, yes, they did a whole episode on Skittles parties, so... you know, that could become a thing again, but it's just where they bring pills and put them all in a jar and they take random pills. Adderall addiction, that's still a thing. It's usually college kids that are taking it to try to stay awake, try to study. If any high school kids are taking it, it's probably those high achiever students that, you know, want to do really well. Adderall, obviously, if it's used in the right way under a doctor's care,
you know, that's a totally different thing. This is them getting Adderall either on the street or from a friend and taking it without a prescription and taking it to, you know, get the effects, drug-like effects. Fentanyl. So I don't know if this is an issue in this area. I just started doing a lot of research on fentanyl and all of that. It's, if you don't know what it is, it's a synthetic opioid, so it's like a painkiller. The fentanyl that's being pressed into counterfeit pills is illicitly made, so it's not the kind of fentanyl you would get if you're having a surgery or got from a doctor because you're terminally ill or something like that. This is illicitly made. So it's, the issue is that it's like 100 more times stronger than heroin. So it stops people from breathing and then they die. DEA was saying it was 4 out of every 10. Now they're saying it's 6 out of every 10 pills that are being bought on the street have fentanyl in them. And fentanyl, like, it's in nanograms. So, like a piece of salt or a piece of sugar, just one little tiny grain. That's really all it takes is a couple of grains of that for somebody to die. So a lot of families who've been affected by this, they want us to say poisoning instead of overdose because they believe it's a poisoning, because it has been, you know, illegally put into, even though maybe that person was trying to get high or whatever, they really want people to know that it's a poisoning. So that's really, that's how they feel about it. I've been working with a lot of families around the Austin area. A couple of moms, like outside, like Cypress, and not so much in this area. But their kids were like normal kids. And they thought they were taking either Valium, Adderall, Percocet. Percocet is, you know, it's pretty strong too, but it's not gonna kill somebody unless they take a lot of it. But they just took one pill, and that's really all it took. To me, I would rather us be proactive instead of reactive. Like, let's not wait until, you know, something happens to a student in this area. You know, so it's something we should all be talking about. Does anybody have any questions about fentanyl or counterfeit bills? Or I think I have a picture of. Yeah. So the M30. That's the ones that are like everywhere. The cartels are like pressing those out like crazy, and it's basically the M30 is a Percocet. And they buy these pill presses. You can buy one on Amazon, and you can basically make your own pills, and they look just like the real thing. Especially a high school student, they're not gonna know the difference. I mean, really. Any questions about fentanyl? I'm almost done. Has anybody heard of this in this area or? Promethazine. So this was one of the things I was really surprised about because, you know, we do the, the youth survey.
Oh, yeah.
The youth survey. So Sherry is working on getting
it's
with
coming out this week.
Oh, it is?
Yeah, it should be.
Okay. Yes, so there is a uterine survey that we help make and send out, the students take it, and that's to help us gather data to see what are some of the issues in the district.
Yes.
And in the state of Texas has the Texas School Survey, and so that's another survey, and a lot of the districts do it. They just don't advertise, the data and all of that. But it's important because you need to know, like, what is going on. One of the things on the last drug survey that we did in LaPorte was that junior high students, I don't know if they got confused because it's technically, it's cough, it's cough syrup or whatever, if they got confused, but it was a really high number of junior high students saying that they had taken lean before, which is promethazine cough syrup. A lot of the rappers do it. It's a huge purple drink. It's a huge Houston thing. So it'll be interesting to see what this data shows in the new one to see if that's still. So basically, it's a prescription cough medicine. You might have been prescribed it before. But they take it and add stuff to it, and if you take more of it than what you're supposed to, it can get you high, and you can see things and hallucinate and all kinds of stuff. There's a lot of rappers who have died from this. You think if one person dies, like, but I guess it's probably really addictive and all of that, but it's really big in the rap culture. And it does a lot of things to the body. So the last thing is just kind of how students can hide alcohol. I mean, y'all probably already know this. I don't think I brought any, but on Amazon you can buy these like false bottom sports drinks, the Arizona tea. And you can try stuff in it. I did bring the hat. The hat, I got off of Amazon. It's got a different compartment. You can try stuff in it. All you have to do is get on Amazon and Google stash, like stash clothing, stash items, and like all these things come up, and you can try and do drugs with
this.
And the way you talk about the health of the inside, because it's advertised on Amazon, it's like you're protecting your body.
Yeah.
It's not advertised.
Yeah. It'll show money. So, it's very easy to buy them. In fact, I got a lot of those. And that's it. This is how you can contact me. Catherine has my contact information. If you have any questions or I'm going to form a subcommittee to work on these issues in the district to carry that out.
Thank you, Amber.
Thank you.
That is all we have for today's meeting. Does anybody have anything they would like to discuss?
You know, I'll just share with you guys. Y'all will start seeing some posters around the academy and the high school. There's the graduation group I've been told from the police. And they're going to, they're working on a positive social work campaign. So we're using the survey they did here before. They're going to do local stats. Some of them want to be local, so they can say, you know, join the majority. You know, 68% of the kids of your peers have never done no one. So we're flipping the stats from the survey and trying to make a social, positive social norm. Like, you don't think everybody's doing it. And then there's other evidence they cite that have given them to use their national stats. And some of them want to do that. Some of them are really interested in doing the football. So that the guys get all the voting jobs and all those new regulations. So anything could be in it.
That is scary and all of that, but still the majority of young people are not.
What?
That's all I have for this Shack meeting. Does anyone else have anything? No? Okay. Well, thank y'all so much for coming.
Thank you.